But the subject of wisdom, or the topic of wisdom, often we think that wisdom is knowing a lots of things, but it's not really that. There are lots of options often in front of us, decisions that we need to make, things that we face, and there are many moral choices, good things that we should do, that we could do as we are faced with these challenges in life. And wisdom is to know which one to choose. Wisdom is knowing which one to take. It's the ability to know what's right in a way that just morality does not provide or address on its own. And that's really what we're going to look at today, is wisdom around the thing of friendship. The book of Proverbs, it screams this at you as you read it from the start to the end. It says that your wisdom is both determined by and tested through your ability to make good choices in terms of friendship. People that you choose to make your friends, or actually the lack of friends, or the poorly chosen friends, those are things that measure how wise you are. As I was preparing for the sermon, I was reminded of a friend of mine, actually in South Africa, that God has worked on tremendously over the years. But when I met him, he was quite a callous man. And he told me a story right in the beginning of when him and his wife, they went skiing somewhere else, traveled outside of South Africa, obviously, to do that. Spent a whole week at the ski resort where the ski hill is, and obviously got to know the people at the log cabin, or the facility where they return to every night to have a bit of time around the fire and friendship and so on. And at the end of the week, a man came up to him that he had been hanging out with that whole week, enjoying the resort with, the facility and the skiing with, and he handed him his number. He says, "Hey, here's my number, man. It'd be really great for us to stay in touch." As to which my friend just said, "Oh, no, thank you. I've got enough friends," and left it at that. And he said that with a straight face. And that's kind of how he rolled. I remember in the beginning we would bring a meal to their home as they had their first baby. And he opened up the door, and there we are with this meal. And he's like, "What was happening here? Do you think I can't look after my own wife?" You know, he was just kind of very, very, kind of like didn't have lots of friends, clearly. You know, and we're going to be looking at the subject of friendship, because maybe you think that you are who you are because of the decisions that you've made. Like, "I've chosen to be this person." But actually, as you grow up, you are who you are because of your family and your surroundings. And as you get older, I realize now, even as I'm approaching my 40s, that I am a product of the friendships, of the community around me. And so it's a very important thing that we make good decisions in terms of those people that we place around us. So three big points today, and point number two will have four sub-points. So the first one is, there's nothing like friendship. The second point is, you have to work at friendship. And the last point is, you need help in terms of friendships. You need help. So let's just look at the first one. There's nothing like friendships. And so we're going to read two verses out of Proverbs together here. Nothing like friendship. First one is Proverbs chapter 18, verse 24. It's on the screen there. "A man of many companions may come to ruin, but there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother." Many companions, it says it's not enough. You may come to ruin, but there actually is a friend who sticks even closer than a brother. It's amazing what this says in a culture where friendship is so important. When this was written, family. Family was massive. You basically were a product of your family. You did what your daddy did and what your daddy's daddy did, and family stuck together. Property remained in family. It was a massive thing. And for this person to write that actually there is a friend that sticks even closer than a brother points to the uniqueness of friendship. Friends can be better than siblings. Proverbs 17, verse 17. Next one says, "A friend loves at all times, and a brother is born for adversity." What does that mean? It's basically saying that when things go tough, when there is adversity in your life, of course, family will be there for you. Family, you know, that's what they do. "Oh, I'm so sorry. Something's going on. I know what's going on in your life because, you know, we're connected way beyond Facebook." So they'll be there for adversity. But a friend loves at all times. Actually, the amazing thing about friendship is that they choose to be with you. Your family might only be there for you when it's adversity, when it's tough, but your friends, they will be there with you all the way through. Your family may not say, "Hey, let's go out for a drink. Let's go hang out just randomly." You know, if there's no other reason other than maybe difficult things or the, you know, the stuff in your calendar, Christmas, Thanksgiving, New Year, etc., why else would they maybe hang out with you? But that's why it speaks of friendship. Friendship can do what family can't. It's an amazing thing that friends are even better than siblings. And of course, our individualistic society puts value on everything but friendship. They value a sort of romantic love or sexual love. How do I know this? Well, let's just look at the glossy magazines that we purchase. The People magazine. What's on the front? Who's best friends with who? Like, who's the next BFF? No. It's who's sleeping with who. That's what's happening. You look at the songs that we listen to, the stuff that comes at us on our radio stations. How many of those songs are about sexual love? And how many are about deep, meaningful friendship? Hey, if you had to put the CDs on the one side, you know, the two kinds of loves, I think one would outweigh the other. Because that's what our society values. They do not choose friendship as a major value. It's all the surface stuff. It's not turned on by friendship. And here's an interesting fact. Friendship is not a biological necessity. Did you know that? In our culture, that's why it's sometimes surprising when you find that people have lots of connections, lots of Facebook friends and so on, but that's not real friendship. Actually, there's some things that you have to have. Our society cannot do without. Romantic love, as we just talked about, kind of the People magazine covers. If that wasn't in place, actually, you probably wouldn't exist, okay? Mom and Dad, I'm not going to go into birds and bees here, but you know what I'm trying to say. Family love. If it wasn't for the love that mom and dad had, that helpful home environment, actually wouldn't be raised. If it's not for neighborly love, the way that we look out for one another and the systems that we put in place, you wouldn't be safe. If it's not for kind of that civic love, you know, and the responsibility that you have, you might not have a job and you cannot provide. All these things are necessities, but friendship is something you have to choose. That's why you can go through all of that stuff and not have friends. You can have a job, you can have a family, you can be in a good neighborhood. I mean, there may even be some romance in your life, but that doesn't mean that you have a friend. Friendship is something you have to choose. Proverbs 18, verse 24 says, "A man of many companions," we've read that together already, it's the first verse, "comes to ruin." In other words, you may have many companions, you may have many acquaintances, many associates, but your life could still come to a ruin because what do you need? A friend that sticks closer than a brother. It's important, friendship in our lives, but you have to be intentional. It is unique. You have to find it yourself. Proverbs 27, verse 9. "Oil and perfume make the heart glad, and the sweetness of a friend comes from his earnest counsel." We'll look at that verse a little later again, but it's amazing when you read the commentaries around this. It's the word sweetness there is obviously refers to cuisine, and it's often used in terms of honey in Proverbs. Because back then, they didn't have sugar like we have. You know, they didn't have the easy little packets or the sachets. Just if you want to sweeten something today, you just chuck sugar in. Actually, no, you had to find sugar. It's like you bite into something. Oh, this tastes amazing. Remember this. This is sweet. And it's like friendship is this thing that you discover. You don't always know you who it is, but you have to intentionally work at it. We're working towards point two. You have to discover friendship. You find out, wow, this person also likes what I like. This is amazing. Maybe we should hang out together. There's this affinity that you find, and you can only discover that. You can't create it. I can't come up to Paul Tibbet and say, "Paul, all right, I want you to like this style of music, all right, so that we could be friends. All right, so let's just do that. I just want you to agree on this. Okay, you're going to like rock and roll." I don't know if he likes rock and roll. Or you know, approach someone else. "Listen, I want you to like this color, or I want you to like this type of food." Because when you like it, we can be friends. You can't manufacture it. You can only discover it. As you hang out with people, as you open up your life, you realize, hey, we like the same things. Often you're so different, but it's the things that you agree on, the things that you like, that starts the forging of this friendship. That's why if people who say, I just want to be friends, this is one of C.S. Lewis's insights. If you just want to be friends, you just want to have friends, it's your goal in life, I just want to have friends. Actually, you find yourself not having any friends. Because friendship requires more than just wanting a friend. You want something besides wanting friends. Because friendship is often built around something. And C.S. Lewis talks about friends are ones that are often side by side, where lovers are face to face, telling each other, I love you, I like you, I like you, no, I like you. But friends are side by side saying, we like this. And that's why marriage, when you have friendship in a marriage, it's so potent, because it's both the, we like this and we like each other. It's face to face and side by side. But if you're not in a relationship, actually friendship is the side by side thing where there's this commonality, there's this affinity, this thing that you share together. And so you have to work at friendship. When you discover it, because there's nothing like friendship, it's even better than family. When you discover it, it's not just like friendship in a box. You have to invest. You have to make it work. And I want to look at the four things together with you of how to invest in it. We'll look at being faithful, being tactful, being truthful, and being helpful. And these four things you can use as tools to either test your friendship. Think about the friends in your life. Are they faithful? Are they tactful, truthful, or helpful? Or you can build friends. You say, I found this person. I like this person. I want to build a friendship with them. Let's do some of these things. Or actually do a little stock take. Say, how am I doing in friendship? Am I faithful? Am I tactful? Am I truthful and helpful? How am I doing with the current friends that I have? All right, so let's jump in together. Faithful. Number one, faithful. Proverbs 17, verse 17. As a friend, that's 25 verse 17. Sorry, I'm making you confused. Leave it on there. Leave it on there. Proverbs 17, 17, we've already looked at that. It says a friend loves at all times. This is where the faithfulness comes in. But does that mean every single time, all the time, friends are just around the whole time? No. Proverbs 25, 17 says, let your foot be seldom in your neighbor's house, lest he have his fill of you and hate you. So obviously, being faithful and being there for somebody is not being there every waking moment. No, of course not. It refers to being there through all kinds of times. A friend at all times refers to the types of scenarios and situations in your life that you're going through, and a friend is someone who can be there for you. The good, the bad, the boring, the happy, the sad. That's the all times that it speaks of. And so this faithfulness speaks of availability. You can't be a friend if you're not around. If you're not available, most people that you know, actually most people that know you, they actually find you pretty useful. They know you because of what you bring to the table. And before you think, oh no, how can I have such shallow people in my life? Just think about yourself. That's maybe how you relate to others as well. We all have those kinds of relationships where people are useful to us. I know that if I want to fish, I go hang out with Mike. He'll do the fishing thing, you know. And there's certain people that I know, if I ever want to have a good time, I hang out with them. If there's a good networking opportunity, I go hang out with those people. I know who I must hang out with in order to gain certain things. We do have this sort of useful premise underneath some of our relationships. But when the time is tough, that's why it says, when you have many companions, your life will come to ruin. Actually, a friend is the one who's not just some acquaintance, because an acquaintance says, hey, call me if you need me. But a friend is the person who's right there, saying, I'm here, what can I do? How can I help? Not like, hey, I'll leave the ball in your court. A friend is someone who's saying, I'm there with you. I will not let you go to ruin. I am here to help at all times. Why? Because to a friend, you as a person are the end. You're not the means to the end, as so many of our relationships are characterized by. Using people. No, you're not a means to the end. To a friend, you are the end. That's why it's important. And they will be there for you, even if it costs them. I love that stories about friendship. I love that when people have been those kinds of friends to me. And as I'm preaching the sermon, as I was prepping it, I was thinking, God, I'm a horrible friend myself. But it's an amazing thing when friends say, even if it costs me something, I'll be there for you. Even if you're not useful to me. So at this moment, you cost me time. You cost me convenience. You may even cost me money. In order to be with you right now, I have to spend some money. All of those things is not useful to me, but because I'm a friend, I'm here. I'll be there even if it costs me. Why? Because I will not let you go to ruin. That's the first one. They're faithful. They're around. The second one is they're tactful. Friends are tactful. Proverbs 26, verse 18 to 19. Like a madman who throws firebrands, arrows, and death is the man who deceives his neighbor and says, I'm only joking. Hey, Can you think of a few of those kind of people? Proverbs 27:14 says, whoever blesses his neighbor with a loud voice, rising early in the morning, will be counted as cursing. What does this speak of? A person who does something really bad and then goes around, I'm only joking. Or a person who's really loud in the morning when you're trying to sleep. Hey, what is it speaking about? It speaks about a person who is out of touch and out of tune. Out of touch with your emotions. Out of touch with their emotions. Out of tune with the song of your life. They don't know you well enough to know that actually this thing that they said or this thing that they did is not actually funny. It's hurtful. They lack tact. They're not tactful. They don't know you well enough to know that you're actually not a morning person. And so coming in here, banging on the pots and knocking on the door, whatever it is you do, is not really helpful. They don't know you well enough. They're out of touch with who you are. They're out of tune with the song of your life. Proverbs 25, verse 20. It says, whoever sings songs to a heavy heart is like one who takes off a garment on a cold day. Everybody here knows what I'm talking about. Winter is on our doorsteps. It's nothing nice. I'm sorry I said it. Forgive me. But don't check out on me right now. The person who sings songs when your heart is heavy, they say it's like vinegar on soda. Hey, all those people who use the natural products to clean their home, you know what you do? Baking soda and vinegar. That's how you clean things off. It's not a pleasant experience, actually. That's the kind of person who is happy when you are sad. They're not able to read the situation. They can sing songs of joy. Well, you're sad. Well, you're crying. Well, you're mourning. That's what I love even this morning as we stood around dear friends of ours as they've received bad news in terms of their health. As a church, we say we mourn with those who mourn. We rejoice with those who rejoice, but when they mourn, we don't rejoice. No, no, no. We come alongside them. There's this tactfulness. We are in touch and we're in tune as a friend to how someone else is feeling. Actually, if you have those people that are happy when you're sad around you, they're not friends, you need to work on your friendship. My wife often talks about the quote of being a parent is like having your heart on the outside of your body for the rest of your life. Because it really is true that the welfare of us as parents are wrapped up in the welfare of our children. As parents, we're only as happy as our unhappiest child. That's how it works. And that's how a friend rolls as well. A friend actually cannot be happy and sing songs when their friend is sad. Now, when I talk about my children and my happiness linked to their happiness, that's automatic. That's parental love. It's instinct. It kicks in. I can't help it. My kids are not happy. I'm not happy. But that's what makes friendship so amazing, is that it's a voluntary act. It's saying that we're not related. You're not my child. You're not my mom, my dad, my brother, my sister. You're disconnected from me in terms of blood. But I'm gonna be as moved by your emotions as you are moved by them. And my welfare will be wrapped up in your welfare. Friends are emotionally sensitive to you. I love 1 Thessalonians 3, verse 8. This is how Paul was connected to local churches. This is how deep his friendship with churches ran. He writes there, he says, for now we live if you are standing fast in the Lord. Another translation says, for now we really live, knowing that you flourish. This is what Christian friendship looks like. My welfare is wrapped up in your welfare. And so I am committed to you flourishing, because if you don't flourish, I'm not flourishing. So this is where Jesus says, love your neighbor as yourself. So I want to flourish. I'm connected to you. You're sad. I'm now sad too. I want to be happy. So I will work until you're happy so that I could be happy with you. You see, that's how that love works. Being tactful. Number three, be truthful. Be truthful. Chapter 27, verse 5. Better is open rebuke than hidden love. Verse 6 says, faithful are the wounds of a friend. Profuse are the kisses of an enemy. What does that mean? Many are the kisses of an enemy. Don't misread what verse 6 says here, because it sounds like saying wounds from a friend means that they're your enemy. No, it says wounds from a friend are faithful. They can be trusted. They are not like kisses from your enemy. They are not your enemy, your friends, if they wound you. If they are truthful, what is a friendly wound? What is that? I believe friendly wounds are the words that you speak, that you say to your friend, that are painful for them to hear, but they have to hear it. They've got to hear it. It's painful for them to hear, but they must hear what you have to say. That's why it says Better is open rebuke than hidden love. What does hidden love mean? Sometimes, and this is, I think it's a very Canadian thing, it's like, ah, oh, I love them too much to tell them what's wrong with them. Actually, the Bible says that is like Judas betraying with a kiss. If you keep it to yourself, when you say, oh, I love them too much to tell them, you know what you're really saying? You're saying, I love me too much to tell them. I'm loving myself too much. I don't want to put myself in that place. I don't want to ruin this thing that we have. It's actually more about you than it is about them. So be truthful. Proverbs 29 verse 5 says, a man who flatters his neighbor spreads a net for his feet. In other words, when you just flatter somebody, you're always just saying, oh, you look amazing. Oh, you are amazing. When you know they're probably not. They probably don't look amazing. What you're doing is like you're setting a trap because you're causing them to make the same mistake again and again. They don't know. A trap is something you're unaware of. You don't know it's there. Spread a net for their feet if you flatter them. But if you're truthful, you save them from that folly. And this is probably the toughest thing, I think, not just with friends, but in general as Christians, to be both tactful and truthful. How do we do that? It is so tough. It is so tough. Because we're saying the pain I'm going to put you through, it's going to create pain for me as well because I care about you. And this is the key. This is how we do that, is we check whether we're often in a status of pain. Because, yeah, you can be careful and then it's never painful for you. You can be too careful. You can be too tactful. And so you never say anything. And it doesn't cost you anything because you're saving face. Or you could be too truthful, but you don't care. And so it's not painful for you either when you hurt them. But Christianity is both. It's both truthful and tactful. Friendship is both truthful and tactful. And here's the thing. You're always in pain. You're tactful because you feel what they're feeling. And when you're truthful, it's painful for you to say it. That's how you know there's real friendship there. And the last one, number four, is being helpful. Friends are helpful. Proverbs 27 verse 9 says, oil and perfume make the heart glad, and the sweetness of a friend comes from his earnest counsel. Comes from his counsel. Comes from his help. And it's amazing. The Hebrew word for counsel is the word for secrets. It speaks of his openness and his vulnerability as a friend. So, of course, there's the help side. It's like, hey, let me just give you a few tips here. But it's also this honesty. It's helping with a good dose of honesty. And in our therapy culture, we're not necessarily familiar with that. Because what happens is you would sit with a therapist or with a counselor. They tell you all your problems, or you tell them all your problems. You don't stop halfway through and go, okay, now tell me about your problems. That's not how that relationship works. Yeah. Tell them, hey, this is really, my life sucks at the moment. And like, oh, and yours, how are you doing? No, you're here to talk. I'm here to tell you what you should do. And then you get the other side of the coin, where people just take dumps on you. They just tell you how horrible they feel, and they just offload on you this heavy weight. They say, oh, my life sucks, and I'm crying, and it's just nothing's going my way. And that's all they do. They leave you like that, no help whatsoever. They walk away, and you stand there with all these burdens. But actually, friendship is not like any of those two things. Only in friendship do you find that there's this honesty, like, oh, I struggle with these things, but actually, hey, let me help you through what you're going through. Only in friendship do you have this honesty and this helping thing that happens. True friendship gives that. Proverbs 27 verse 17 says, as iron sharpens iron, one man sharpens another. Sparks both way. Both are hard. Both have challenges. There's the similarity there in that sense. But as they come together, honest but helpful, they sharpen each other. All right, how are you doing with those four things? If you're like me, if you were like me this week as I prepared, I realized point number three, I need help, man. I need help. To be this kind of friend, you need help. I don't know about you, but as I listen to this list of what a good friend is and should be, number one, I long for that kind of friend in my life. I long for that. Those kind of friends in my life. You know, today friends are taken away faster than we can forge them. In this culture that's so busy, that's so demanding, the work hours that we have to, the traveling that takes place, maybe not just in your job, but I've experienced this firsthand. I have 3 years of water under the bridges of friendships that we've got here. Only three. It's going to take some time. I left 36 years or so worth of friends behind in South Africa. And so I hear this thing, and I'm like, God, I long for this kind of friends. Because we don't have necessarily the friends that our hearts so desperately need. And number two, I find it to be overwhelming. I find it to be crushing in one sense. I find it to be almost impossible. How on earth can I be tactful and truthful and faithful and helpful consistently? How? How's this going to work? And I realize that I am not getting this kind of friendship in my life because I'm not giving it. I'm not a recipient necessarily of this kind of friendship because I am not that kind of friend myself. So where do we get the power to be the friends that we need to be in order to have the friends that we need to have? Where are we going to find that resource? Where are we going to get help from? Well, I love this about the gospel. Because from the beginnings, the first few chapters in Genesis, it tells us that God is a friendship. Father, Son, and Spirit, loving each other, preferring one another, helping each other, serving each other, knowing each other. There's friendship in the Trinity. The Christian God has friendship as the ultimate reality. And then this God makes you and me in his image. That's why when I talk about friendship, many of you are like, I long for a mate like that. I want a friend like that. Because he made us in his image. And it says that he wants to be that kind of friend with us. That's why in Genesis chapter 2 and 3, it says God wanted to walk in the cool of the day with Adam and Eve. In Hebrew terms, walking is a sign of friendship. When you walk with someone, you're basically saying, I'm his friend, I'm her friend. God wants to be our friend. And then you fast forward right down to Jesus hanging out with these 12 disciples and the words that he leaves with them in John 15, 16, and 17. And he says this in John 15. Let's read this together. He speaks to his disciples. And he says, no longer do I call you servants, for the servant does not know what his master is doing. There's this whole honesty aspect. God's saying, I want to let you in. I want to keep things from you. No, we're friends. And no longer you're servants, but I have called you friends. For all that I have heard from my Father, I've made known to you. And then you fast forward a few verses, and Jesus says, no greater love is someone than laying his life down for his servants? No, for his friends. And so actually the resource to be the kind of friend that we need to be, we find that from Jesus. We know what it's like when friends turn on us, right? When people reject you. When people let you down. Or when you let someone else down, what often happens? Those friends turn on you. It's not always a gracious endeavor and a forgiving endeavor. They hold grudges. They turn on you. But we don't see Jesus do that. No. Jesus is the true friend who will stick closer than a brother. He will glue himself. That word stick is actually, when it says a friend will stick closer than a brother, it's the word that is used for marriage even. A man will leave his father and mother and cleave, stick to his wife. So it doesn't speak about compatibility necessarily. It's a choice, a decision, a covenant that is made. And Jesus is the one that will stick to you at the ultimate cost to himself so that you will not be ruined. This is the friend that we have in Jesus. How does he do it? Okay, we heard that wounds from a friend can be trusted. That's what Proverbs tells us. And although that is true, that actually Jesus is truthful. He's the sun that shines brighter than the noonday. He exposes sin. He is truthful in our lives. But he's not the one who only, in a sense, inflicts those honest words on us. But he's also the one who takes the wounds. Jesus is not just the one who is truthful, but he's the one who takes the wounds for the bad friendships that we have been to each other and to God. He absorbs that. Jesus lost his connection, his friendship with God on the cross so that you and I can become friends once again with the Father. And the best example of people letting Jesus down is those last few moments of his life when he prays in that garden. And you know, his friends in that moment fell asleep on him. He's like, please guys, stay awake, pray with me. Some big stuff's going down in my life. Could you just stay awake a little bit and pray alongside me? Every time he came back, they're snoring. They fell asleep. He is sweating blood. They're falling asleep on him. They fall asleep on him. They betray him. One of his closest friends come up and they kiss him. A sign of affection is betrayal. And he gets arrested. And then what happens? He hangs on that cross and one of his closest mates, Peter, denies him after claiming, I will never deny you. No ways. I'm there right till the end. People say, hey, weren't you with Jesus? Oh, no, not me. It says he calls down curses. He was like, what the beep, beep? I don't know this beep, beep guy. Like he, this is literally what took place. And what does Jesus do? He knows this is coming. In that garden, he prays. And God said to him, hey, listen, man. If you want to keep these friends, you're going to have to suffer. Otherwise, you're going to lose them. And Jesus said, I'll suffer. I don't want to lose them. I want to bring them in. This is the friendship that we have in Jesus. And when you realize that he is the friend that will let you in and he will not let you down, you can be the friend to other people. You don't have to worry about being rejected. You don't have to worry about others not treating you in kind. Because you know, as I said in worship this morning, God loves you. Jesus will not let you down. And that empowers you to be the kind of friend and paradoxically, therefore, receive the kind of friendship you so desperately need. You can be the friend you should be so that you can have the friends that you need because you are in friendship with the greatest and the most ultimate friend, Jesus Christ, who put his money where his mouth is. Oh, it came at a great expense for him. He was willing to be inconvenienced. There's no benefit for him. You're not useful in that sense. No, he sacrificed to bring you in. Isn't that incredible? Isn't that incredible? I'd love for us to take communion together. And actually, let this be a moment between you and God. Like, ask yourself, what's your friendship with the Father like? What's your friendship with Jesus like? Do you live as one who can truly say, God's my friend? And therefore love people in ways where, even if they let you down, you can still be a phenomenal friend because you have affirmation from the most important opinion in the universe. How are you doing with that? And obviously, as you gather around this table, around the bread and the juice, you realize that this is what it cost Jesus. He said, I'd rather suffer than lose these friends. And when you see that, you have the resource to suffer to be a good friend to others. Let's stand.